Now we present an encore presentation of Protect Your Assets with David Hollander.
So first, let's just say there isn't a deal, and that's possible. And so if there isn't a deal, first, it's important to differentiate between hitting the debt ceiling and the U.S. defaulting. Practically speaking, the debt ceiling prevents the Treasury Department from selling additional Treasury debt. That's a problem because regular sales of Treasuries are how the U.S. government funds its day-to-day operations. However, and here's the important part, if the debt ceiling is hit and the Treasury Department can't sell additional treasuries, it does not mean the U.S. is bankrupt or in default. What it does mean is that the Treasury Department then has to ration its existing cash and decide who to pay and who not to pay. So Treasury could pay interest on existing treasuries, soldiers' salaries, Social Security, and not pay federal workers or federal contractors. The important point is this: hitting the debt ceiling doesn't mean the U.S. automatically defaults on its debt, but it does mean it'll have to direct cash to essential services and payments and not pay less essential services. This matters because it's going to create a huge headwind for economic growth and make the hard landing we've been talking about more likely. Also, the general uncertainty of the Treasury restricting payments would be a headwind on economic activity, obviously. Second, the delay of a paycheck from the federal government to workers, contractors, etc., would cause an even bigger headwind on economic growth. And this is practical, and this is what's negative for the U.S., hitting the debt ceiling, and it would be more than just general uncertainty weighing on the overall economy. So the next part of this is, well, what happens to asset prices if there is no debt ceiling deal? Well, we have something to look back on, 2011, you may remember that. And so let's look at that. First, longer-dated treasuries performed very well, and if there's a place to hide during the debt ceiling drama, longer-dated treasuries was it. The 2011 debt ceiling drama intensified in May of 2011, and the 10-year yield was around 3.2%. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? By the time the U.S. got to the eve of hitting the ceiling, late July, early August, the 10-year yield had declined to 2.7%, meaning the 10-year treasuries rallied. By the market bottom in late October 2011, the 10-year yield had dropped to 1.8%. And if we think about it, this makes sense because regardless of what happens in the next 3 weeks, no one credibly thinks that interest payments won't be made on 10-year Treasury debt, nor that short-term Washington fiasco will materially degrade the creditworthiness of the U.S. government and paper that they produce. So investors are looking at this event as a finite moment in time, almost like a pothole in the road. Yes, if we hit the pothole, it can cause some damage to the car and discomfort to the driver, but it won't derail the entire journey. And bond investors are avoiding this pothole by selling 1 month treasuries hard right now, the yield's over 5.5%, and buying longer dated debt, and we expect that to continue. So stocks do not do well in a period like this, even if it is resolved at the last minute. The S&P 500 fell by 6% from May through August of 2011 when the drama was really intensified. And then it dropped another 15% after a debt ceiling extension was reached. So the peak to trough decline for the S&P 500 was more than 20%. From May till October. This past week, we also got some important economic data, which, as you may remember, I said that the data now is going to be driving the future of the market here. And so obviously the debt issue has front and center stage. But this past week, we got the consumer price index number for April, and it was a pretty good number. It actually came in at 4.9%. And this is the lowest level we've seen in about 2 years. CPI is called by some to be what's called the super core inflation reading. And this was the lowest rate we've seen since July of 2020. Next, the weekly jobs report that we look at was actually pretty good as well. It showed that more people are requesting unemployment benefits. The number rose to 264, and this is higher than the estimates of 245, and once again, in the right direction, because remember, anything over 200,000 is what the Fed wants to see. Why? Well, because this signifies that the jobs market is cooling down, which is exactly what they want to see. And last, the other economic data point this week that we were looking at was the producer price index. These are prices that people are paying for stuff. And once again, that number was pretty good. It was the lowest reading we've seen since early 2021. Now, again, none of these numbers are absolutely fantastic, causing everyone to jump up and be very happy. But still, they're good, and they're showing that disinflation is working. The Fed is managing to slow things down and most likely will not be raising rates anymore. So at this point, a pause is likely, and now we'll just wait and see when they may ultimately turn and start to lower. That, of course, the market would like to see and would be good for stocks. So another question I received this week is, why are regional banks still causing market declines? Because it's really not about contagion, since banks are in much better shape than they were in 2008. Well, good question. And as we saw this week, PacWest was one of the banks we've been talking about for the last several weeks, months almost. They had a statement out this week that showed that they had 10% of their deposit base leave. And the stock got punished and was down 22% after that report came out. So the reason why these types of events are causing market volatility is because the regional bank stress is still impacting the broader stock market, not because of a contagion risk, but instead because of what we will call economic risk. Now, there are three reasons, once again, why this is very different than the 2008 contagion we saw with banks back in 2008. First, unlike 2008, the underlying assets on most bank balance sheets, the big banks, haven't lost value. They're still in U.S. Treasuries. So this isn't a matter of solvency, it's a matter of liquidity. Second, the Fed's discount window and BTFP facility helps to alleviate this liquidity concern. Third, a structure is already in place to handle troubled banks via the FDIC, just like we just saw with First Republic Bank. So bottom line, the risk of a 2008-style contagion in the banking system is very low at this point, and that's not what's going on with the market right now. The reason things like this are affecting the market is because it's more likely than not that the economy could have a hard landing, and here's why. If banks are worried about deposit runs, they're going to keep more capital in reserve than they normally would. That reduces the amount of cash or capital to make loans. Additionally, if banks think their regulatory costs will increase, and they absolutely will, or regulators are going to deeply investigate their operations, they're going to hold even more capital in reserve, further reducing the capital available for loans. Now, this could be a reduction in lending, which ultimately benefits the economy. When I studied economics, we called this credit contraction. That's finance speak for banks aren't willing to give you any money. And if that happens, well, that creates a substantial headwind on the economy that could increase the chances of a hard landing given the Fed's rate hikes and ongoing qualitative tightening. All right, so let's turn to the S&P 500 report. At this point, the S&P 500 is looking somewhat bearish. We have a key resistance level on the upside of 4180. On the support level, keep looking for that 4056 support with 3960 as the next dropping off point.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.